is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. It seemed to me like the establishment, and we all know what that means, that they were taking out a series of insurance policies as election 2020 was happening, and well before that in the planning stages. But you know, I have to tell you, Peter Navarro, I think he summed it up far better. And he says this, and I quote, "This was theft by a thousand cuts across six dimensions and six battleground states." And I thought, well, really, that sums it up pretty well there, exactly. So we're talking about the Navarro report to start off here, and Peter Navarro. Let me bring on first Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is here. He's the president of the London Center for Policy Research. And he's a CIA-trained intelligence operations officer with 35 years of experience in global and national security. There is a lot to talk about, Tony, for sure. And I want to start with this Navarro report.
Sure.
So Navarro says the allegations of irregularities are serious enough to warrant an urgent probe and substantial enough to overturn the results. The report was just released a couple of days back here, the 17th. It was called the Immaculate Deception, and supporting the claim that this election probably was indeed stolen from Trump. Tony, what's the biggest thing that stands out in this report to you?
Well, it confirms a lot of the research we've done, and I think your audience probably knows I've done independent work on whistleblowers and helping identify and bring folks forward who were witnesses to the fraud. And there's other things we're investigating now that I can't get into because we're still investigating. We, unlike other folks who have been working this, we don't go public with something until we're 100% sure. So the biggest thing that stands out is the scope. This was essentially kind of all the dirty tricks done all at once and done in a way that I think was observable because the actual vote for President Trump was so overwhelming that they had to they could not hide it. And that is to say, there's several indicators, I'll use an intelligence term, indicators of the fact that their cheat was overwhelmed by the fact in several of these states, which we recognize the quote unquote anomalies to have happened in, kind of near simultaneously had to do certain overt acts. For example, stopping the vote at midnight. It's pretty obvious that there's an issue. Secondly, the digital anomalies. I've done a number of briefings on this, and you know, there's trend lines generally go very organic. They go kind of in a horizontal motion, you know, kind of gradual. And vertical lines are bad. So horizontal good, vertical bad. And you have all these vertical spikes in the middle of the night, indicating that something was going on. And then, of course, you add to this the potential of what I think many recognize is the digital vulnerability. And I think we're going to probably touch on solar wind a little bit later, which I think there's something related to this, but not, you know, I don't want to get into it now, but just suffice it to say that if you're looking at Dominion, Dominion is not a voting machine, it's a voting system. And when you have a system, especially one that has a lot of technology involved, you have to certify that. And arguably there's been initial reviews which show that these machines were programmed to be less than efficient or accurate in their vote tally. So you put all this together, the Navarro report, I think, does an excellent job of kind of laying this all out in layman's terms.
Yeah, I mean, this report, I thought, was the best so far to come forth. Well, between this and the Antrim County, Michigan forensic report, which was quite something.
The bottom line is those machines were not certified for use. And the moment, let me make this very clear, the moment you inject or move a piece of equipment around in the system, each Dominion system has about three or four machines, depending on the configuration.
Okay.
Unless those are configured and certified by election authorities, they are inevitably going to have huge failure rates. And in this case, I think it was a planned rate. I think those things were programmed to do exactly what they did, to throw a certain percentage of vote to one candidate or the other. And remember, all the evidence is all these mistakes benefited Joe Biden. I have not heard of one mistake so far in all of this that benefited President Trump.
Yeah, that is a terrific point you make there. This whole Dominion thing, the more you look back at it, you know, when a lot of the accusations are being made of different countries like Venezuela and China and what have you, and there were a lot of accusations and things. And of course, a lot of the media took all those and said, oh, my God, these people have lost their collective minds on the right because they're saying all this. But as you look into Dominion and you understand who they are, and where it came from, it actually was all true, Tony.
It is true, and I've spoken to people who were actually eyewitnesses to the Venezuela cheat. Mm-hmm. There was reasons why Smartmatic and Dominion were selected by the socialist government of Venezuela to run their elections. That's because they could essentially program the results, and that's just the way it is. And I have people who I've spoken to who directly observed those results 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise here that certain folks had picked these things. And the other thing I'll just say, it's obvious. Gee, apparently Texas rejected Dominion software, rejected the machine, saying they were not adequate. Mm-hmm. And Florida was able to manage all of this in a secure way. Both states were able to manage their vote by mail, absentee, and in-person voting the day of the election in environments which were as complex, if not more complex, than the other states, and they did it all election night, and we knew the results that night. So
that's a good point. Yeah, that's good point you bring up. I think it was, if I remember correctly, Tony, and maybe you know that, I think it was about 28 states used Dominion, was it? I think something like that.
Something
if
like
I
that.
Recall
I
properly. And out of those, I wonder how many are blue states versus red states, because I got thinking here when you just mentioned Texas and Florida. But yet Georgia, which has had some weird politics going on in Georgia lately, for sure, they seem to get in succumbing to that. We need to look at that and see how many of those were blue versus red. Or, you know, again, back to this whole bigger plan or whatever the hell it is. You know, the other interesting thing, Tony, we talk about Dominion. When you go to the Dominion website, by the way, DominionVoting.com, they have a whole setting the record straight there document, which I did a whole program on this the other day. And when you compare and contrast the things they say in there compared to the Antrim County, Michigan forensic report that was done. And what do you think about that forensic report, by the way, in Michigan?
No, I think it is indicative of the fact that, you know, they keep saying it was, quote unquote, human error. The human error was it was programmed to be that way. You really don't have human error in digital systems. They're only programmed to do what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You don't really have, you can have a system failure. You can have an update that doesn't properly take. That's an error. But you don't have things which swap votes for candidates. That's a programming. That's either a programming benefit or a programming feature, but it's programmed. And this tells me that everything else in Michigan has to be examined, everything, all machines.
Right.
And there's a reason why Texas said no to Dominion. And I testified in Texas. I testified on voting on this very issue in Pennsylvania three times, 8 visits to that legislature. And I visited Georgia as well. And out of all the states, Georgia was at least receptive to what I had to say, which I think is very obvious now that they just weren't interested in doing best practices.
Yeah, it's hard to really understand Georgia. I mean, when you see what's going on with Kemp and the Secretary of State Ressenberger there, it rattles the mind, actually, as Republicans, what their really end goal is, or it kind of smells, is beginning to really have an odor over there. I don't know what's happening there, but let me ask you with the Dominion. One thing I've noticed, Tony, and kind of what you were just saying, they're using a lot of duck speak on this stuff. It's hard to follow the language. They take words and they're twisting them to get, and that's what Dominion is doing, actually, when you go to that website, as I say. They put these declarative statements out there, staying far away from the truth to counteract the forensic report. It's quite a thing when you go back and forth between the forensic report and Dominion site, which I've done. Yeah. And there are so many oddities about it. It's unreal. The Dominion thing, Arizona, let's touch on that a minute here while we're on that, because subpoenas were issued for the machines by the Arizona State Judiciary this past week here.
Right.
And the goal, the Senate President, Karen Fan, says the goal is to verify the machines did what they are supposed to do. Right. Now, as you see what just happened in the last day or so here, last couple of days here, the Maricopa Board of Supervisors voted 4-1 to refuse to comply with the legislative subpoenas to turn over the Dominion voting machines for a forensic audit. And they want to go to the Supreme Court there in the state. What do you think about what are they so scared of? What are they afraid of?
Well, I've already said in my Twitter feed, the U.S. Marshals need to go in and seize the machines. This is not negotiable. The bottom line is, why would anybody avoid transparency? This has been a hallmark of the Biden campaign and the Democrats. I can't imagine anybody seeking to avoid oversight of one of the most important rights we have, the right to vote and pick our leaders. And that they wouldn't have a clear and transparent review where there's doubt. This to me is very dangerous by the fact that there's at least 75 million people who don't believe Joe Biden won. And this is where the Democrats are further reinforcing that perception by doing these sorts of completely idiotic moves to prevent oversight and necessary review. It's dangerous. And the fact that these Maricopa County clowns are endangering the smooth and open access to things that the American public needs to see indicates to me it's almost like a guilty tick. It's like, we don't want anybody to look because we know they're going to find things. And that's why I have to presume it at this point. They're trying to hide evidence of a crime.
Yeah. It appears to be that way. You think they'd swing open their doors and say, come have at it.
Well, exactly.
If you're legit and honest, that's what you do. So it seems to be they're hiding something, Tony. And for sure, you know, before we leave the Navarro report here a moment, when he said, and I just love the term that Navarro uses, a theft by 1,000 cuts across 6 dimensions and 6 battleground states. It's hard to sum that up any better than that, Tony. I thought that's the insurance policies I keep talking about that the establishment took out. But when you look at those 1,000 cuts and you look at the 6 areas, let's talk about, you've got here, just listen to all the, I mean, this is crazy. Listen to all the ways, the questions. So we can call them whatever you want to call them, but these are all major irregularities, questions, something. The first one, Tony, was outright voter fraud. This includes a large scale manufacturing of fake ballots and bribery. And dead voters, ineligible voters like felons and illegal aliens. There's a myriad of that stuff throughout our election system. So that's the first one, correct? Outright voter fraud. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, the manufacturing. We had a whistleblower, which you're aware of, Jesse Morgan from Pennsylvania, who believes he transported upwards of 24 pallets of manufactured ballots. So I know from talking to people directly, people I've interviewed and vetted and validated, that there was an immense efforts made to create physical ballots to go into the system, at least in Pennsylvania. So, outright voter fraud. And we saw this also in Atlanta, where you saw election workers pulling out suitcases of ballots when no one was looking, or they thought no one was looking.
You were involved in that somehow, all those ballots filled out already in the trucks and things. Tell us what happened there. What that's about, please.
Well, I was in charge of the investigations regarding whistleblowers and other operations for the Armistead project for about 30 days. Compared to putting the jersey back on to go play quarterback again for a while. And during that time, I was running investigations to vet and verify some of the important leads which were coming out. One of them was this whistleblower. And simply put, he and others who came forward, there's a press conference, you can go look it on online. We discussed what these whistleblowers saw. And the most important one, in my judgment of the group, was Jesse Morgan, who just a blue collar guy, drives a mail truck, contract mail truck for the Postal Service, basically observed what he thought, and based on what he was told by the expediter, were Pennsylvania ballots that were prepared for injection into the voting system. And he moved these on the 21st of October. a full couple of weeks before the election. Wow. And my judgment is these things were pre-staged in all the critical precincts of interest where they thought they could put them into the system unobserved mm-hmm. and be counted. And I think that happened in Philadelphia. I think it may have happened in Pittsburgh. So.
Yeah, that's now this Amistad project you're talking about there. That's the gentleman just off the top of my mind. I think isn't that Philip Klein there or something?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, it's Phil Klein.
Abuses right. regarding poll watchers and observers. We all seen a lot of this.
Oh, yeah.
Violations of state law in the area, and they were keeping people out and all of that. That was interesting, wasn't it?
Right. So, yeah, the moment you start obstructing people from doing their sworn duty,
that's right.
then you have a problem. And again, this is in all the key areas, all the key states, you know, it was consistent to these states and these Democrat controlled areas. And it's fraudulent for even, I think, one judge in Pennsylvania said, well, as long as you're in the room, it's OK. It's like that's totally insane. Mm-hmm. You can't have that. And I think the observed obstruction is another indicator of what they were trying to do. It's a form of cheating.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that is dawned on me, Tony, is the down ballot in all of these races. You know, I started thinking about Georgia, and Perdue was looked like he was winning that whole thing. He wouldn't have had to have he wouldn't have had to been in the runoff here. And he was ahead until all this started switching. And then you see Republican John James out of Michigan. He's actually suing. He's trying to go after Democrat Gary Peters. You don't hear a lot about that race as well, but a lot of people think John James won that rightfully. And again, back to Georgia. Now you have these runoffs when, you know, obviously he could have won. The down ballots were heavily impacted here, weren't they?
Well, they were. And I think that's one of the factors that needs to be examined in more detail. I would argue that some of these down ballot issues are as significant, if not more, especially in Georgia now because of what's going on. Exactly. I think these things need to be examined in great detail. And again, going back to one of our earlier points, there's absolutely no reason why the Democrats who control those precincts should fight oversight and accountability and review. If they fight that, then I think that's indications of a crime.
Yeah. Here's the other thing now in Georgia, while we're there, you see there's about 76,000 new Georgia voters. You see that are registered, a lot of them from out of the state, I'm assuming, is what they're guessing here.
Right.
But are we afraid the same thing is going to happen with these two Senate races here? Or is this,
I think this has been made very clear that Georgians need to demand their state leadership do something to secure the vote. I think Georgia has made a mess of itself.
They haven't even fixed the problems from the presidential race, and now they're doing these runoffs. I mean, they're right. setting themselves up for the same kind of thing. I mean, clearly Absolutely. The two senators are a little ahead at the moment, if you believe any of the polls, which I don't. I don't ever follow the polls. But why you can't take a chance when it comes to those Georgia races, and yet they seem to be doing that, Tony.
They do. And I think it's very dangerous. So, again, I think the people of Georgia should demand that their government, who's supposedly controlled by Republicans, although I'm pretty skeptical at this point, that they create conditions for fairness and accountability. And I haven't seen that so far. Yeah.
There's a big push. Everybody seems to, and I've been thinking about this a lot, big push to get up to the Supreme Court. Everybody's talking about that. But I think when it comes to this race, and clearly John Roberts and company have pretty well seem to be showing their colors. There's a lot of controversy on John Roberts right now all over the place.
Right.
In regards to this, it doesn't appear to be that the Supreme Court is going to be the salvation here to begin with. It's going to be the state legislatures as far as what happens, and then Congress on the 6th. With what happens there. Now, the Trump campaign attorney, Jenna Ellis, says there's still time for state legislatures to convene in special sessions and authorize alternate slates of electors, if you will.
Right.
But, you know, you got all these anomalies now. What do you think the key to this is now between now and the 20th? Where are we going?
Well, this has happened before. I mean, in the,
right.
I think it was 72 72 with Nixon. Hawaii initially went Republican and then was reversed by the legislature to vote Democrat. Or is it not 1960? It
60.
Was one of the Nixon.
60.
Yeah, 60. Yeah. Right. So this has happened before and it may well happen here. And look, there's adequate time. There's more than adequate. Vice President Pence on the 6th of January can say, this is contested. I'm not accepting the results. And then in my judgment, and I've been asked this before, and I'm saying it again, fraud has no expiration date. If this can be proven, should things go against the president, and Biden be sworn in, nothing says he can't be removed from office. Remember Spiro Agnew. Spiro Agnew turned out to be a complete corrupt politician, former mayor of Baltimore, I think governor of Maryland, who was Nixon's vice president. He was removed from office because of his prior to being elected fraud. So there's no doubt in my mind that this isn't over. It's not over at all. As a matter of fact, I think the fact is that there have been second alternate electors sent. I think the legislatures have plenty of time to act between the 1st of January and the 20th of January. That's a lot of time. Wisconsin, I would hope, goes first. I would hope Pennsylvania goes second. I think Arizona would go third. And I think, believe it or not, Georgia's going to have to be, may come around still as well because of some of the issues there regarding their machines. But, I'd like to believe that's going to happen before the 20th.
Yeah, so that would be the smoother path forward, obviously. But but you bring up a point that I have pointed out many times myself and my colleague and co-host on the second hour here of Viewpoint, Michael Johns. We talk about it all the time. I so appreciate you saying what you just said, because I want all Americans to understand there are no expiration dates here. Tony's exactly right when he says this thing doesn't expire here on the 6th or the 20th, by the way.
Right.
You know, freedom and liberty shouldn't have an expiration date is what you're saying, Tony. And that's a beautiful thing. And even even if the levers of Washington change over, as you and you hear that giant sucking sound coming out of D.C., where, you know, you've got the new admin coming in, new cabinet, new agency heads, new various things. All of that could be reversed and would have to be if this thing begins to. But then we're dealing with people call it a constitutional crisis, Tony, but I actually call it myself a constitutional stress test.
Right.
I think is what I call it. And I do believe that's where we're headed. And I don't know whether it gets done before the 20th or not.
I find it interesting because the other side has broken all the rules. Now they're trying to use the rules
exactly.
to win. It's like, excuse me?
Exactly.
You cheat and now you're trying to use the rules to benefit? No, I don't think it works that way.
Exactly. No, that's perfect. Exactly, Tony. And all these years, 4 years of all the, you know, never accepting Trump. And now, what do you mean? You're not accepting Biden? What the hell's the matter with you people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and all of a sudden there's this problem out there. It stretches the imagination. By all sense here. Let me talk to you here finally about these multiple federal agencies. I know this is right up your alley here, and I certainly want your and there's even talk, and I think you hinted to this earlier, but let's talk about this now. So this is pretty significant here. Multiple federal agencies hit by cyber attack, and we're talking, I mean, this is as big as you've seen here, I think here. Massive in size and scope here. We're talking about the Departments of Treasury, Homeland Security, State Department, Agriculture, the National Institutes of Health, the Commerce Departments. You're talking about involved in that Department of Energy, by the way, is you've seen some stories on this. Everybody has as well. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, two national laboratories, a DOE, and the Division of the National Nuclear Security Administration.
Right.
Now, there is talk on the backside, and I don't know what you think about this or that this may have something to do with the election. And it seems like we're almost under war here. We're being attacked here. Talk to me.
So, no, I think there is a direct link. I think it's why some of this is coming out now. And Mike Pompeo, well, I advised Mike when he was over at CIA as director there. I think I'm not necessarily agree with his initial conclusions that Russia was behind this.
Exactly.
Do I believe Russia could have done it? Absolutely. And simply because they use ATP 2829, which is a Russian hacking malware, I don't believe necessarily Russians did it. But yeah, you say what you said is completely correct. DHS, Homeland Security, their CISA, the Cyber Infrastructure Support Agency, are completely compromised. They were compromised by this SolarWinds event. So let me be very clear on what SolarWinds is. SolarWinds is essentially a company that helps other large companies manage their networks and databases. So if you're using SolarWind and SolarWind is compromised, everything you have is compromised in turn. And this is significant. These guys had huge market share to include both private sector and government networks. And they did this in a brilliant way. You know, you and I probably use some sort of an antivirus software. Well, what they did is, you know, your antivirus updates, they were able to compromise the SolarWind official digitized and signed updates to all of its the folks using its technology, all of its clients. So basically, you had one big compromise, SolarWinds, compromising all these other companies. It's quite evil and quite brilliant when you think about it. But this went on for between 6 to 9 months, and we're only now trying to figure out what all happened.
Yeah. So you kind of answered some things there. You think there could, you know, listen, I always get very suspect as well when they immediately go to Russia and back to Pompeo. And he did say that, and amongst others are saying it's Russia. That seems to be the go-to immediately. But, you know, Tony, truth is, if you're some other entity like China or somebody else, and you want to pull people off the trail, well, that's a perfect thing to use or do, or a way to do it is to pull them off the trail. Since we blame Russia for everything, I mean, could be some truth to that, no?
Oh, absolutely. No, and I'm not saying the Russians didn't do it. I'm saying I don't necessarily think the Russians, just because there was a Russian software used.
Exactly.
It's Cozy Bear is the code name for this malware. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they did it, and apparently they were able to find where the data was being sent. Microsoft was, and actually take over some of the domains where the data was going. So that's a good thing, where some of the Microsoft security folks got ahead of it. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change the fact we don't know to this day, probably won't know for a while, the scope of what was compromised.
Yeah, no. Well, that's what they're saying. This is going to be more like months and years before we really know. In fact, they don't even know how deep this is, and they don't even know if they're still in there or what's happening. I mean, it stretches the imagination here how this even got so widespread on the level it is. And I think it just documents to what I've been saying right along, that everything in the cyberland we're going to be a threat with. I talk all the time, Tony, about our electrical grids, our water supplies, all these things that are controlled by cyber. I think it's the war of the future, how they're going to try to take us down again and again and again.
Oh, yeah. And you should check out, as your audience, check out our upcoming Thought to Action and the London Center podcast, where Ambassador Hank Cooper and I talk about that very thing, the link between EMP and digitization. So I think your audience would like that.
Yeah, definitely. We will absolutely check it out. There's a lot more to talk about in what you say. Last point here, Tony, before we expire here, is the DNI, John Ratcliffe.
Yeah.
So the president's executive order on foreign interference in U.S. elections, I'm speaking about, you know what that is here. The DNI's report was due within 45 days from the election, which would have been December 18th. We've gone by that. He is to provide a report, the DNI, to cover the inventory of all known acts of foreign intervention in the 2020 election. There's a lot of speculation as to why that's kind of being held up a little bit, including the Biden's input into that, or the Biden family. What do you think to that story of the DNI? What comes out of that?
Well, the DNI had a really good interview with my friend Catherine Herridge over at CBS, and I would look at that very seriously. Mm-hmm. Ratcliffe flat out said, while the report may not be out, flat out said that there was interference. He said it. I think they may be trying to wrangle the details of how that worked, what happened exactly. But and I do believe there's aspects of this regarding the Bidens. We cannot ignore the fact that China provided $1.5 billion in investment money to Hunter Biden, and that Hunter Biden is now under investigation. And in my judgment, again, going back to Spiro Agnew and the example of his being corrupt before he became vice president, look, everything indicates to me, from Tony Bobulinski as a whistleblower and other things I've read, that Joe Biden was getting 10% of whatever Hunter Biden was bringing in, which in my judgment makes him equally compromised into Hunter, regarding China. I don't know about you, but I don't think it's in our interest to have any individual sworn in as president who's been compromised to a foreign power. And that's what exactly they accused President Trump of having done during his time, which turned out to be completely false. But in this case, regarding Biden, I think it's true.
Yeah. Tony, in a message you sent me just here in the last day or two, you had said you believe this is all an act of war. Comment on that, please.
Well, look, you cannot. The Chinese have made it very clear that they're out in their own military doctrine to dominate the Pacific Rim and be able to take us on militarily. The way you do that best is to weaken your enemy as best you can through other means before you have to go to war with them. So what I see here is essentially they do something called total war. They believe they're at war with us now, even though they're selling us all sorts of stuff. We recognize they're doing that not out of the goodness of their heart, but for purposes of trying to undermine our economy. And now with the Swalwell issue, with the Hunter Biden issue, it's very clear they're trying to undermine and disrupt the stability of our government. And I think that clearly is a is something that the Chinese government are doing with a great deal of thinking and strategy and with intent.
I think there is a major point to what Tony Schaefer says there. And Tony, I thank you very much.
Sure.
Well, this has been a year of unusual stories and scandals and challenges for the American people. But to top it all off, as we close 2020 here, and as we're in the holiday season, interestingly enough, on Monday, Jupiter and Saturn come together about a tenth of a degree apart in the sky, if you will. The astronomers call this event the Grand Conjunction. It's the closest these two planets have appeared in our night sky since 1623. This is to give you some historical comparison. That's the year that Shakespeare's collected works were first published. Well, the timing of this has led to speculation whether this could be the same event that the Bible reports that led the wise men to Joseph, Mary, and the newly born Jesus, which was known, of course, as the Star of Bethlehem. Many are calling that the Star of Bethlehem this year. Some are calling it the Star of Christmas. But whatever it is to you, this is really quite a moment in 2020 that we end it this way. So I want to take this opportunity to wish you and yours a very, very Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to others who celebrate that or whatever you celebrate in your life, wishing you the very, very best always through the holiday season here. I know a lot of people are looking forward to the new year and want to get on to what 2021 has to offer. So before I move on to the rest of the program here, let me also mention to you our second hour Viewpoint Presents. This has been a tremendous asset and a great hit for us. Now we have the two full hours on Sundays now, 10 to 12 and 6 to 8 later in the day is an encore. All of our shows go to podcasts, and I want to ask you to go over to Apple Podcasts and subscribe. Leave a comment there, if you will, and rate the show. It's important everybody does that. But again, it's on podcast on demand if you do miss it live or catch us at 10 a.m. Sunday mornings for the both big hours or 6 o'clock later in the day. Now, in the segment today with Michael Johns and myself, we'll get into in great detail the Navarro report, the Dominion machines, but also the Hunter Biden a story that is now just being picked up again, as it is now a post-election, and go figure, right? And also what happened to that flash drive. You remember Tucker Carlson had up on the news site there at Fox. You don't hear much more about that anymore, what was on that. So we'll dive into all of that in the second hour. I want to play a quick clip here for you from the second hour. Listen in.
But just think about the evidence. Anecdotally, we take the first look at one of these systems that we've been concerned about, you know, thinking that it flipped thousands of votes. It is a 68.05% error rate when the federal standard is to have 0.0008. I mean, this system should be completely unplugged and never used again. But first, it has to be all of these need to be examined nationally.
Well, listen, the courts are very hesitant. We obviously see now, Michael, the courts are very hesitant to step in on every level. I mean, on all the way up to the Supreme Court, clearly, they're very hesitant to step in into this election business.
Well, because it's broad. It's broad. Sure. And the facts are going to be, you know, obviously, we have affidavits and these are signed by individuals who face 5 years in jail if they're misrepresenting things. But obviously, they're going to present their own testimony, tainted probably. Biased, probably, agenda-driven, probably, but you can see they're not cooperating. The broader political point is that can't the country just unite around the fact that allegations of voter fraud, whoever was the beneficiary or was damaged by that fraud, need to be taken very seriously? Because they're not being taken
seriously.
Well,
let me answer that for you. The answer is no. They don't. I disagree with you. They're not going to take. No, they're not going to do that because they're the reason it is that way.
Let's deal. There's two questions. Should they? And then are they?
So in addition to all that, up next, we have Dr. Peter McCullough. And I think one of the most major stories of this year, again, is the COVID. But now it's the vaccine. I'll stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. So up next, let's talk about this vaccine business. What's going on? There is so much bad information out there. Well, let me bring on Dr. Peter McCullough, please. Dr. McCullough is an academic internist and cardiologist from Dallas, Texas. He's been a leader in the pandemic response to the COVID-19 disaster. He published the first guidance for the medical treatment of ambulatory patients. I was just up at the Senate there a couple of weeks back with Senator Ron Johnson and Dr. Harvey Risch. Did a tremendous job with this COVID business, trying to get to the bottom of it, which Senator Ron Johnson is an amazing patriot, the work he's doing there. So to be clear now with everybody, there are a lot of vaccines that are being enacted around the globe, but in the country here, there are two so far that have been approved by the FDA. And that, to be clear, that is Pfizer and Moderna. Both have been approved, and now Pfizer is already being utilized, as you see there. In fact, there was a confidence booster where they had, you might have seen this or not, I don't know, with Vice President Pence and Second Lady Karen Pence and Surgeon General Jerome Adams. They were receiving the Pfizer shot. They did a big thing on television. And the whole concept here is to get people to be comfortable, because a lot of people are not comfortable. A lot of Americans are not comfortable with the vaccine for a lot of reasons. And it's an opinion-based thing. And not everybody is ever been comfortable with vaccines, let alone this one that has been, really, many would argue, rushed to market. No matter if you've had regulatory, steps demolished or not, it's still being pushed out there pretty fast. Dr. McCullough, so there are a lot of stories about people having allergic reactions. There are, I've seen a lot of that happen there. But let's start with the health implications, if you will, please, of the vaccines. What are you seeing thus far, Dr. McCullough, with some of the questionable challenges that people are experiencing, please?
Well, Malcolm, thanks for having me. And let me state, these are my own opinions and not necessarily those of my institution. But it certainly is a heroic and valiant effort that we're seeing with respect to mass vaccination for COVID-19. And I think when it was understood in the spring that the spike protein, or the little spiky sticks that stick out of the ball of the virus, when it was realized that we could generate vaccines that could promote antibodies to block those spikes and block the viral entry into the body, the race was on through warp speed, Operation Warp Speed, to develop vaccines. And there are 8 vaccines globally in the running. One has just recently dropped out in Australia. One vaccine has been very early initiated in Russia. However, relatively few patients have actually physically received the vaccine. And then in the United States, this month, we've just had emergency use authorization for the Pfizer-BioNTech And now, as of yesterday, the Moderna vaccine. So we have two vaccines up and running in the United States. Patients have been vaccinated for about 2 days with the Pfizer vaccine. And already there's been a report of 5 severe allergic reactions in the United States. There were 2 previous ones last week in the UK. And so the first thing that your listeners should understand is that if there's a prior history of severe allergic reactions to vaccines, this needs to be brought forward. Lastly, and this happened in 4 cases in the Pfizer program and 3 cases in the Moderna program, of Bell's palsy, which is a paralysis of the face on one side. Right. And you may see these are low numbers. In fact, Bell's palsy was investigated with the flu shot years ago. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, analyses suggested it wasn't related at all to vaccines. But so far with Pfizer, there were 4 cases of Bell's palsy in the vaccine group, 0 in placebo. And this is just over 2 months of administration. With the Moderna, there were 3 cases in Moderna vaccine and 1 case in placebo. These will need to be further evaluated. Sometimes the facial paralysis resolves, other times it's permanent. Wow. So what we're learning with the vaccines very early on is that it's all going to be about a balance between benefits and risks. The vaccines are not risk-free.
Right. So how would you rate, the success so far? And are you pleased so far with the ratio or number of these reactions, I guess?
Well, let me just state that both vaccines programs in the United States had claims for a 90% reduction or greater in COVID-19. Now, it turns out since it was readily identified who got placebo and who got the real vaccine, people who got the real vaccine knew it, and they were much less likely to come forward with a suspected COVID case than a placebo patient who knew they were uncovered. So we think that 90% efficacy rate is far overstated. Clearly, the vaccine does something to prevent mild COVID-19, but in both programs, severe cases of COVID-19 that required hospitalizations were not stopped by the vaccines. Have to look very carefully at the data, again, weighing benefits and risks as opposed to, in my view, mass vaccination.
Well, and that seems to be where they're headed. Is this mass? In fact, what many are saying, even in the media circles, is that in order for it to be effective, I think, what are we hearing, numbers like 70% or something, or you have to get the majority of the population has to be vaccinated. Is that correct?
I think that's incorrect. I've heard that statement made. It's incorrect.
Okay.
Here's the reason why. Yeah. Right now, if we have 17 million who have had confirmed COVID, the CDC estimates there's 10 to 1 additional people who've had it. They just haven't had the test.
Exactly.
So that means we have 170 million who have had it. The estimates are probably 30% of the population is just not susceptible because of their immune system or genetics. So that would be 120 plus 170. So we have 290 million people in the United States who actually don't need the vaccine. They don't need it. So what's left? That means basically about 70 million people really are susceptible and need the vaccine. 70 million is far less than 75% of the population. So I think the estimates on who needs the vaccine and how many people need it is grossly overstated.
You know, Dr. McCullough, I have a very deep, deep feeling on this that we have got this all wrong. And when I say that, and let me put this out there and see your thoughts on it. Initially, with all the lockdowns, you know, and I'm seeing, by the way, just yesterday reports now London, by the way, parts of the UK are poised for another tier 4 shutdown, lockdown. And people in the UK, and I've got many friends out there and others, they're going absolutely crazy over the politics out there. But here people get really upset and it becomes very personal. If you don't wear a mask, if you don't do certain things, if you don't get a vaccine, they want to say you're not patriotic or you're a fool or they call you out or things of that nature. But what I want to suggest to you is that initially and early on when these lockdowns, we're going to close down for 2 weeks to flatten the curve conversation, which ended up being an absolute joke. But that was the whole thing, how they pushed that onto the public and a very unsuspecting public. We got it wrong in the sense that really it was about the elderly that, and it was about people that had underlying conditions, people that, that were more at risk. Those folks, those are really the people we need to protect and care for and do everything we can. I mean, really, this is truthful and help. And that should have been the case of the lockdown. You know, I'm thinking right now, Dr. McCullough, it's the same argument with the vaccines. Yeah, the vaccines, like you just said, state, go with your numbers. If we state that truth, sure, those people that could help that are at high risk, because the alternative of death is not a good alternative. So you want to do everything you can to help those people. And that's probably a good risk factor. But the rest of the population, I mean, what are we really trying to accomplish at that end? Does that make any sense, what I say there?
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, the science behind this, and we have to follow the science and the evidence, is that the science behind this, it looks like natural immunity to the virus is quite durable and comprehensive. And I've reviewed the literature on this, and I think we're at nearly 60 million people worldwide have had the virus. There are only, I believe, 34 cases of suspected reinfection. I've looked at every case, and none of them hold water. In my view, I don't think there is a single recurrent case at this point in time. So what we're looking at is, if the best thing to do is have a mild case of COVID, get through it, and basically be immune and go live your life and not worry about it. The concern with the vaccine is that the immunity won't be durable and it may not be thorough, meaning that we have to have both antibody and good cellular responses. And so we're trying to artificially, in a sense, simulate the infection and then get an immune response. It is a great experiment, and it's a great experiment that the manufacturers, the U.S. government agencies, and the health systems are asking patients to participate in. I just reviewed a consent form from one of the major hospital systems for the COVID-9 vaccine. And the consent form clearly indicates that no one can be held liable for adverse consequences. The manufacturer can't.
Wow.
The person administrating the vaccine can't. The hospital can't. You're completely on your own. This is very interesting. Well, you're completely on your own. So if one signs up for the vaccine, one has to realize, listen, this is voluntary. It certainly can't be forced. And you have nowhere to go if there's a problem.
Wow, that tells you plenty, what you just say there. Is, you know, step out of your role, if you can do this for me or not, as a doctor. Let's talk to me as a private citizen when I ask you this question, if you would. It's just an American citizen. What are they up to? When I talked about this lockdown, Dr. McCullough, Mr. McCullough, when I talk about the lockdown and I talk about the vaccine and the pushing for that, what is the game plan? I'm trying to understand the game plan. Why such the push, and why the hate, the high energy and the hatred, if you don't subscribe to the theories of mass vaccination and mask wearing and paying attention, stand in line, march forward, and, you know, shut the hell up. I mean, what's going on?
It almost seems like the pandemic has been an opportunity for all kinds of control mechanisms to come in over populations. And we have been seeing this throughout our lifetime. I think the control mechanisms probably came in during the major world wars, as an example, or they may have come in during states of emergency temporarily, like a hurricane or a flood. But what we're seeing now is we're coming up on a year of control mechanisms coming in, where there are overarching directives regarding freedoms, if one can go out or not go out. And the virus, and it's all intended for the public good. And so immediately people are analyzing this of, is it really for the public good? And everybody, I think it's fair for everybody to have an opinion on this. We clearly have to have somebody in charge. In the United States, the agency in charge of contagion control is the Centers for Disease Control. The agency responsible for drug evaluation is the FDA, and the agency responsible for research is the NIH. So we have three responsible agencies, and we do have to look to them. And I do think that we do have to follow rules and directives, because otherwise it's anarchy. But it is fair to state, after a year, we can start to look at things and ask the question, is it really for the public good to enact these policies and follow these policies?
Yeah, and I think it's reasonable to ask the questions that we're asking right now. And it almost seems like we're missing something here. And as you say, it's like our liberties no longer exist or no longer relevant to the equation here, which really does stretch the mind and should get it. Really, what I suggest to everybody is it should put you on high alert that there's some other motive. And I hate to say that, because it makes us sound a little, out there. But it seems like anytime you question authority or question the way it is, you're sort of put into that block there. They immediately call you out. I'll give you an example here. Very interesting story in CNN that was sent to me from a Joe Lockhart, which everybody's probably knows who I'm speaking about there. Tucker Carlson's vaccine rant should be called out by every reputable news organization. And I bring it up because I found it very fascinating, the piece here. And he says quite a bit in here, but the First Amendment offers wide protection for free speech in America, he says, and they state that. But they take this, Dr. McCullough, and they refer to this as sort of yelling fire in the theater conversation. That's the one they always pull out of the back wagon when they want to prove a point. And so, oh, you can't, you know, say fire in a theater, and nor can you say that a vaccine doesn't work or that you're not supposed to wear your mask because somehow that is, you know, the fire in the theater conversation. So you have no liberties. Now, I think it plays to what I was just saying right now. Well, evidently, according to this, Tucker Carlson went off on some sort of a rant. And so he comes back and he calls him a carnival barker because he has a different point of opinion. He says he's the chief carnival barker on this one. And he's saying that the media needs to shame these people, dox them, shame them, and which is really what you're seeing a lot of out there. And because they don't approve or agree with, you know, their so-called science. This is the wrong message we're sending in our healthcare, for sure. Does this concern you, this sort of a thing?
Yeah, what concerns me most is the lack of scientific discourse or dialogue. Since the pandemic hit, we have not had a single major scientific meeting where we've gotten together in any aspect of medicine. We're trying to do it by WebEx, and there's no discourse. In fact, some hospitals have put gag orders on doctors not to discuss COVID. And I think this is a manifestation of really systemic fear, panic, isolation, and fear chronically brings out the worst in individuals. So, for instance, among doctors, there is tremendous fear in treating COVID. So the doctors who are stuck in the hospital on the front line, they don't have a choice. And believe me, it's not a happy experience, but they're stuck doing it. Doctors in the clinic in the outpatient realm, so many of them simply throw up their hands and say, you know, there's no evidence. I don't treat COVID. Now, that's a pretty convenient stance for a doctor. That means there's no phone calls. That means there's nothing to worry about. There's no lab test to check. We don't have to worry on calling in any medicines. And the U.S. public is being railroaded into the hospital with unnecessary hospitalizations and death that follows. And the studies suggest when doctors do show courage and compassion, and they use available drugs in a sequenced multi-drug approach, they can drop hospitalizations by 85% and drop mortality by 50%. Some people say, well, why does mortality go down more? It's because so many of the deaths are accounted for by those in nursing homes and senior homes. And sometimes the families elect to withdraw life support measures and things like this. But the point is, I'm extremely disappointed with the medical establishment and all three of our major government agencies that I've mentioned. I testified in the Senate on November 19th, and I clearly implored everyone. I said, listen, we need an emergency pivot. Otherwise, we're going to overflow our hospitals in December and January, and we're going to be in the darkest ages that we've ever seen. And in fact, that's happening.
And you're speaking there, the pivot would be to early home treatment, a lot of things we talked about previously, correct?
Yeah, if we pivoted to early home treatment, and we don't have to treat everybody, but I would say patients over 50 with medical problems, we would dramatically change the landscape of this illness. We wouldn't have fear and panic. Hmm. I still think we should have to do reasonable things like trying to reduce the spread of the illness. In my view, we wouldn't need these draconian lockdowns because our hospitals wouldn't be overflowed. And if we had early home treatment, like is done in India and Pakistan and Central America and parts of South America, Asia, if we did what the other parts of the world were doing, we wouldn't be the world's worst country for COVID-19. Mm-hmm. America, the top medical institutions in the United States are here, but yet we're the worst in terms of pandemic response.
Yeah, I was thinking just a moment ago, we should put you in charge. We should ask President Trump to get you and Rich to run the thing. Lockdowns don't appear to be effective to me. You take a look at New York and California, as I say. Dr. McCullough, they have some of the worst records here anywhere in the world right now. California is on this. The people in California, they've got everything closed and locked down. They're in a massive free fall out there. Yet their numbers are rising through the roof. Same thing in New York. So what does that tell you? What's the bottom line to that? I mean, you can't tell me the equation is that lockdowns are very effective. Let's all do it, because we're seeing the science and the evidence doesn't say that. Talk to me.
Boy, I tell you, I've actually seen a case of COVID developed through somebody wearing an N100 mask, a gas mask.
Wow.
So this virus is so contagious that, you know, I think reasonable measures are reasonable. If we take more severe measures, it doesn't stop it. People who are, quote, locked down, they still have to get groceries. They still have service people coming into their houses. They still have inner relationships with one another. That the quote lockdown, honestly, is just, it's almost just like an economic unnecessary penalty. Should we be reasonable? Yes. Do I wear a mask every day? You betcha. Do I wash my hands and I take reasonable steps? Sure.
But one of the other interesting stories is the this one that it comes out of the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. So they've just come out with this very interesting thing that they could they're saying they can force everybody to have a vaccine, and they're not the offices, businesses for those who are working or are fortunate to have a job, that they can force you to get a vaccine, and that this is not going to step, they're not going to stop them, the EOC, because they're saying it's different and that it would be okay to do that because the vaccine doesn't fall under the category of the EOC of what they're saying is, you know, Disabilities Act, where you can't hold against somebody's, you can't get their health information or, you know, whatever private stuff, but they could demand people get this vaccine. Yeah, this really pushes the boundaries to me. This also seems to be very political in nature. Any thoughts to this, Dr. McCullough?
Let's just go back to the consent form for the COVID-19 vaccine. The consent form does mandate that the person who gets the vaccine allow their information to go to statewide databases. So this is already happening. There is an accounting of who's getting the vaccine and who isn't. And this is going to be, I think, one of the most pivotal aspects of personal freedom that would be, you know, challengeable in the United States. In my view, this vaccine is no different than any other vaccine. It takes a doctor's order and it takes a doctor's judgment to weigh the risks and benefits. We just can't be giving this vaccine out at CVS and Walgreens with no physician oversight. What really bothers me is then there's been a free pass to vaccinating people who have already had COVID-19. That's a huge number of people. And let me tell you what, these people were strictly excluded from the studies. From what we can tell, even those who had positive antibodies that never even knew they had COVID, they had no benefit from the vaccine. So if we have no benefit, all we can do is offer harm to people and unnecessarily waste the vaccine. So I'm very disappointed with the rollout. It looks like it's not following science. It makes no sense whatsoever to be vaccinating young people at the hospital. We ought to be right at the nursing home and senior homes, getting those people vaccinated. And then we need to have doctors provide oversight based on the risks and benefits. I think there are very few people outside of a nursing home worker that I would vaccinate under age 50. Very few.
It's Dr. Peter McCullough. And, you know, you just learned so much and heard so much that is so vital, so important. What an extraordinary hour here on Viewpoint. And as we come to the close of the first hour, my friends, up next is going to be Michael Johns. And let me tell you here, this plays into what I was telling you earlier about when we were talking to Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and all that's happening with the election. These are the stories of our lifetime right now that we need to pay most attention to. We'll take the next hour up on Viewpoint. And again, as always, thank you for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.